from Port Angeles, it's Todd Ortloff.
All right, welcome once again to the program. Going to have a wide-ranging conversation about some things related to county government. Most of today we'll be occupied learning a bit more about the Washington State University Extension Office here. There's a lot of programs through the county you may be involved with or know of, but you probably don't know that they're because of the Extension Office, and we'll learn a bit about that and how it's funded and everything else in between. We're also going to talk a little bit about some other things with the county government as we welcome to the studio two of the Clallam County Commissioners. We have Bill Peach here and Randy Johnson, and we're going to start with those two as we're going to chat about fireworks. I know it's hard to believe, but May is here, and it's already time to maybe start talking about fireworks. And last year, of course, there was a lot of talk about fireworks and whether there ought to be a countywide ban similar to maybe what the cities do around here as well. And Bill, I'm going to go to you first, because in the West End, it was kind of it's an interesting dynamic. This, I think people learned, was a debate that had definite geographical changes to it. Depending on kind of where you lived, you had a different opinion perhaps on what the county would or should do about fireworks. So, Bill, what's going to happen with fireworks this year? Because we kind of left it at a certain point last year to be revisited.
We've taken a look at options. One option will hit the table on Monday. Commissioner Ozias has been very active on it. Bottom line is we're not proposing a one-size-fits-all regulation. And in fact, what we'll propose is a system that says where people say, I don't want fireworks. There's a model already in place. We'll try to use that to allow those people to say, I don't want the fireworks here, right around me. But elsewhere in the county, they have the same option, but they don't have to.
Okay, so that said, that's something similar to what you, I think, somewhat advocated for last year in this debate, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Because when the original proposal, and this was kind of the, I remember a discussion, and certainly Randy does too, this was kind of thrown out there, we're going to have a ban on fireworks. And it started at this point, and I think that really got some people talking about it. And maybe that was purposeful, Randy, a little bit at least.
I appreciated the comments. So first of all, you have to recognize that my background may be different than Bill's and everyone else's. But I, one of the people that testified in front of our group, and I may have mentioned that, said, I may have been the one, as I described, the bottle rocket that went through the roof of one of our buildings. And he wondered why I might be against fireworks, as well as having all my wife's horses run around right in circles, you know. And so then you have that part. And then you listen to Clallam Bay CQ, and, of course, all the people there, and that's a really big thing. And finally, similar to what Bill said, Martha Island came in and said, you know, we in the county, which actually makes a lot of sense, could have by area a vote of the people about what we should do, where we should go. So that was part A, I guess, of the whole thing. Part B of equal importance to me is, you know, we need to take a close look at the fire danger, because that is very real. And this year looks like it could be bad thing. And so if you have fire danger that even reaches moderate level and you have a wind of 20 miles an hour, I'm sorry, but, you know, we need to specify.
So there may be a stipulation. Yeah.
Just say, hey, everyone needs to know that that will be a case where we will have no fireworks in the county just because of the danger level. Right. And, you know, all you have to do is, we were just out at something with about climate change in ONRC the other day, but they're talking about the historic fires across the North Peninsula, and you look at all of those, which are just major, you know, thousands and thousands of acres, and all it takes is, guess what, one of those things, right. You know, we think about California paradise, and we don't want to have that happen up here.
Certainly Bill can attest to that. He lives in a city that nearly was lost in one of those major fires a number of decades ago, and there is there's even reminders still out there if you look closely, as the Big Forks fire. I'm going to go back to, if the county does adopt something like that, where certain areas might have fireworks at a certain level and other areas not, how do you obtain where those areas would be? Is this going to be a vote? Is this going to be a petition? How would you see it, Bill, as somebody? I'm just thinking I'm in a neighborhood perhaps that I may not want them right in my neighborhood, but, you know, maybe a couple miles over, it's appropriate. They may want them, but that seems kind of close. So how would that look?
Well, there's a policy that was put together dealing with guns and fire ranges, right. And that's actually worked fairly well. And so what that provided was the opportunity for people that have an interest in either accepting or rejecting this to voice their opinion and then organize around it to say things like here's the times of day or whether it's permitted at all. One benefit, and I'm real interested in what happens on our discussion Monday, is enforcement. Mm-hmm. You know, the biggest issue I saw from the conversations that we had in areas like Port Angeles and Sequim, where it's already been, you know, said, we're not going to do this, it's banned, there's still a big problem with enforcement. And so it could be the case that what we're developing, where people pull together and say, for my community, for my neighborhood, there may be a desire to see enforcement come along with it.
That would be very interesting to see. We talked about this, Randy, last year in this whole discussion. Remember, it was about enforcement. Even if you did an all outright ban across the county, I mean, it's a big county.
And in a limited sheriff's office,
right?
That we
people were going, yeah. Well, okay, I don't want them hanging up on a real call, quote unquote, for a fireworks call.
Well, exactly. And again, right. the it's not like our sheriff is not busy all the time exactly. with all kinds of other major issues. So,
right.
You know, and how to enforce it. But back to what Bill said, if you think about the hunting ban in areas mm-hmm. and people. You know, absolutely provide information. Gee, someone's out hunting in this area. Boom, you need to know about it. And it's taken a while, of course, for that right. to take hold. So.
Yeah, but it is true. There's some organized phone tree efforts, basically, you might call it that,
yeah.
where and those folks get turned in, if you will.
Well, up where I live on Mount Pleasant, yep. I'll tell you, there's a phone tree that works very well, and people
right.
know what's
right.
going on. So,
right. so it's a little bit of the kind of know your neighbor sort of thing that could happen out of this as well. This is a tough debate. Fireworks is a tough debate, I think, in general, and I think it gets even more so when we talk about the county level because of that whole urban versus rural versus there's just I'll call it an attitude, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but it really, I mean, people who live in a rural area tend to have a little different take on things than perhaps someone who lives in the middle of a town.
Well, they do, but I would also argue those of us that live in a rural area, I'm thinking about the question, regardless of anything else, everyone has to agree that fire danger is something you've got to look out after. I mean, no matter what else happens. So let's make sure that we're covered for that.
Well, and I'm going to tell you, I live in a rural area, and I'm worried about that probably more so than the guy in town would be, because it's going to get me first if it's a wildfire.
Exactly. Totally agree.
Right.
So.
Right. Bill, do you think this is going to satisfy folks out in your district, you know, because they really did have some issues? And I think most of it was they just wanted to have some choice.
I think you're right. And, you know, tradition's a big deal. And the reality that there are places where you can let your fireworks off safely. There's a higher frequency of places than there would be on, say, the eastern part of the county. But let me assure you, nothing that this process is going to do will interfere with our ability to say it is too dry. Mm-hmm. We have a hazard. Because that fire marshal responsibility is not going to be touched by any of this, and that's paramount. You know, the safety comes first.
And there's some state rules in all of this, too, that kind of play in. That's one of the things that gets muddy, I guess, about changing the rules. You can change them. You can change them, downgrade from this, but you can't go above. I don't know. Right. I remember the whole conversation. It's not as easy as just saying you can or can't sell fireworks. You got to do it a certain way and timing and things like that. But I know the fire marshal rules are pretty cut and dry.
Well, they are. Well,
as being touchable, I guess.
Yeah,
that's
true. The question is what definition do you use?
Right.
And so, but the state Department of Natural Resources has fire danger, you know, indexes or indices.
Sure.
And once you have those, you can tie to those very specifically.
Right.
But I would argue that we need to not only tie to that part of it, but also tie to the issue of wind and forecast and whatever, and put them all together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's still a step in process, a discussion for our Monday morning.
That's interesting.
Commissioner discussions.
So folks, don't be surprised. The 4th of July is coming closer than you think, because we're talking fireworks already. Although we should say that any sort of major change that's going to happen is not going to affect this year because of
this
the way
year will
this
have
all
to
works.
Be exactly
right.
Sure.
All right. Okay, let's take a break. We're going to come back. I want to talk a little bit about the Heritage Advisory Committee and Commission. There's some found money that might be usable. You may have seen some newspaper reports about this that might help out some museum type things in our area. And then also a little bit on later. later on, we'll talk with Clea Rome, who's the Wyoming State University Extension Director here in Clallam County. And Clea's going to tell us a bit about everything that goes through her office. And there's a lot of things that go through that office. And we'll touch on all that when we come back. Got the County Commissioners, Randy Johnson and Bill Peach here as well. Stick around.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio 1450 KONP.
May is Home Improvement Month. KONP Radio, along with the experts at Angeles Millwork and Lumber Company and Hartnagle Building Supply, have some helpful advice for the projects you're planning.
We're not all experts at home improvements, and we don't always have the time to do our own projects ourselves. That's where hiring a contractor comes in. They're professionals. They have years of experience, and they know the materials intimately. To avoid the horror stories we all know about with bad contractors, you must do your homework. Start with a detailed plan of what you want to accomplish. Next, research contractors in your area. AngelusMillwork.com has a contractor referral list, so start there. Set up appointments with only licensed and insured contractors and get any estimates in writing. Ask for references. Ask to see examples of their past work. You want to get the absolute best you can afford, so don't skimp on your homework. It's not a good idea to go with the cheapest contractor. Pay attention to how you communicate and if your first interactions have been professional and on schedule. Trust your gut. Once you've decided on the contractor, set up a reasonable timeline and communicate in writing. Once a job is completed, spread the word. Word of mouth is everything. Angeles Millwork and Lumber Company and Hartnagle Building Supply, building homes, building communities since 1906.
The experts are standing by to help during Home Improvement Month and all year round at Angeles Millwork and Lumber Company and Hartnagle Building Supply.
The Logging Show, one of the biggest events at the Squim Irrigation Festival, starts this Friday at high noon. Here's what's happening this weekend at the 31st Annual Logging Show in Squim.
Be on Blake Avenue in Squim Friday at noon for the start of the Logging Show. The day starts out with truck and tractor pulls and amazing chainsaw carving demonstrations from noon to 6. Be on hand and watch as pieces of wood are transformed into stunning works of art. The strongman competition starts at 4. Watch as the world's strongest men compete in events like the axle lift, the arm over arm truck pull, log press, tire flip, stone stack, deadlift, and car lift. It's unlike anything you've ever seen. Make sure to check out the beer garden on site too. It'll be open from 4 to 10.
For a full list of events happening this weekend at the 124th Squim Irrigation Festival, log on to irrigationfestival.com. Radio Pacific is proud to be a media sponsor for another community event.
Have you been interested in solar energy, but the cost or location of your home is holding you back? We have good news. Clallam County PUD is now accepting participation agreements for the purchase of units in our community solar project. Available to PUD Electric customers, this is an affordable and easy way to support renewable energy in your community. Visit clallampud.net for more information. Clallam County PUD, bringing energy to life.
All right, back with more. We're going to talk a bit about perhaps some money that could help some local efforts here to preserve some history and some things related to that. There has been, you may have seen some media coverage of this recently. I'll call it found money, Randy Johnson, but I don't know if that's the right word, but it is some money that could be allocated, I guess, specifically for what are kind of termed heritage preservation items. Right?
Well, and again, it's a fund that comes in very specifically, and it's about $15,000 a year. It's happened since we went back and took a look at it for considerable period of time. And again, it's supposed to be allocated to historic preservation projects and or individual entities that could use that. Unfortunately, we had not kept track. And so we had our CFO go back and take a look at that period of time. And total generated in that period of time, I can't remember, is over $200,000. And we also took a look at where we had spent money on specific historic preservation issues, which is, of course, where it's supposed to go. And, of course, you take A minus B, and there was still a fund reserve balance of over $100,000 when you take a look at it. Now, we do have needs in the old courthouse, which is one place it could go, and we're taking a look at what that is. But as you said, newfound money, it may be an area where we will be able to take a look at the excess, and that could be allocated in our preference, and we're right now working through it with the Heritage Advisory Committee to see where should that go, how should it be allocated. I mean, so they have a methodology of both for application and then their recommendation of where to the county commissioners, where should that be applied, so we can do that. Of equal importance is we will start keeping track of that, lo and behold, so that it comes in and it'll be a separate line item on balance sheet. And we'll know what comes in, what goes out, and where it gets you. So, and what, that hasn't happened.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to get to that, too, because I think an illustration of new direction in how the county's approaching some of this stuff as well financially. But where does this money come from in the first place? It's got to be generated in some sense.
Oh, it is. And I can't recall if it's a recording fee that generates it. It's, again, $15,000 a year, and it's like a dollar per document or something.
So this
like
is
that.
Coming basically through the auditor's office, I mean, or work that's happening there too.
And so that it comes in and it goes up and down a little bit every year. You know, it might be $12,000, might be $18,000, something like that.
Interesting. But because it hadn't really been tracked, you've got a chunk of it now.
I appreciate the Heritage Advisory Committee when they came in and said, by the way,
did you know?
And being quite honest, I did not know. And so we went back and took a look at it, and Jim Jones had helped provide some information from prior times, but again, we had Mark Lane, our CFO, go back and actually, you know, it's great to have a CFO go back and actually take a look at where all it had been applied and what had come in that period of time, and you know.
Well, to steer it a bit off track here, I mean, this is an example of, I think, some of the things you all had argued about going with this direction of a CFO position. Is this a good example of why that's a good move?
Well, I mean, if you think about the CFO position, it's not only things like this, but equal importance coming right along. We were asked the question, you know, about indigent defense, the court, where we had absorbed, of course, the city of Sequim, the city of Port Angeles, and the county. So we have one court system, you know, of course, if you're caught stealing in Sequim or, you know, whatever it is, we have the same kind of comparable sentences across the board because it all makes sense, right? And therefore, by consolidating, we should also be more efficient. Well, both cities rightfully ask the question, as does the county, are we being efficient?
Is it working? Yeah.
Is it working? Is it being efficient? Where do all these numbers come? Whatever. So we right now have our CFO involved with the county, with both the city of Sequim and Port Angeles, with Burke Consulting doing a study, which will, of course, involve the prosecutor's office, involve the public defenders, you know, and on, and the court, district court. And so we're going to take a look at everything. Everyone understands Sixth Amendment rights are, of course, according to our Constitution, in place, right? But let's take a look at what all these costs are, and is it really, are we being efficient with the money? I have not seen that study because we haven't done one yet.
So, it's underway, right?
So it's underway. Pending. By the end of the year, we'll have some indication about whether or not, you know, what those costs are. And can we be more efficient? Does what we're, you know, are we actually, you know, doing what we said we would do?
Right.
You know,
so. And a lot of that, of course, flying in the face of some things that happened at the state level with changes in charging, having indigent defense and sentencing and some other things like that where you can do fines.
Well, and of course, the state still hasn't. I mean, our budget for just the indigent defense this year is
that's a whole other kind.
$1.5 or $1.6 million dollars, and the state still funds us to the tune of $80,000. So the county gets to make up the difference. So we could talk about
that'll be next topic. Maybe we'll do that next time. Just to kind of put a wraps on this heritage money that's out there. So is there going to be a development maybe of a process, it sounds like, that people could apply for this? I'm kind of equating it to what hotel motel tax dollars might be, you know, where there might be a competitive bid or something.
No, what we're I sat with the Heritage Advisory Committee the other night, and we talked about the fact that you need to develop a methodology for both application and both recommendation to the commissioners. They're the logical committee to do that. They're the people that have the most knowledge about where to allocate those funds. And so we're right now in the process of doing that. We need to have a further discussion amongst all the commissioners about funding every year so they understand how much would really be allocated to them to help decide. So all that makes sense. And, you know, we're in process right now. As a matter of fact, I just sent an email to Paul Gleason, who's chairman of the Heritage Advisory Committee, and we're going back and forth, and so we can kind of work up something to come forward. So. Right.
Well, there's certainly a lot of projects. There's a lot of things that could do it. You know, we all say, oh, great money, but $15,000, if that's roughly what you've got a year, is not a lot, but it could do some help.
But if you're a nonprofit, you know, of a whole bunch, $15,000 could be a tremendous amount. And or, you know, it's up to the Heritage Advisory Committee. They may have a project that really makes sense for $75,000, so we might fund for the next 5 years. I mean, that's up to them and their recommendations to me, so, you know, or all the commissioners. But
all right. Well, we'll stand by and see. That's kind of an interesting little change of direction for things as well. Bill, I'll ask your take on this, too, about, you know, the fact, going back to talking with Randy about the CFO process of this. I mean, it kind of illustrates having some, you know, everybody needs a guy, they always talk about. It sounds like you now at least have a, you know, somebody that's kind of just tracking finances a little bit in a different sense. Not that it wasn't really happening, but this is, a CFO takes a much different approach probably than maybe what had been.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing that's different is we now have the ability to take a look and have a conversation about what's going to occur in 3 to 5 years.
Right.
And, you know, we had been managing projects as they appeared, if you will, you know, just taking a look at this year and next. But what here's a good example. I will be presenting some information. Mark sat with me, and we took a look at the legislature that occurred this year to identify issues that we should be aware of for next year's budget. Indigent defense popped up 2 or 3 times. But the fact that we're willing to sit down to, all right, you know, didn't find any upside, it would have been nice. We did find a little bit of downside. And then also, how are we doing on major infrastructure issues? And what's next? Which one should have a higher priority? Is it water? Is it sewer?
Randy, just to put a cap on this part of it, and then we'll take a break, is this getting closer to an approach that's going to fix some of the structural deficits that are in the budget?
Well, the structural deficits, you know, that's a whole different topic we can talk about. You look at state revenue having gone up far in excess of inflation, and counties not even up to what inflation is. Right. So we will continue that area. But back to what Bill said, and from my perspective, things, first of all, capital budget. There's some major issues in my mind, including the emergency operations center sitting in our basement. And if that's a major strategic thing, we need to allocate capital to it. And we as commissioners, and with the input from everyone else, where do we need to allocate capital? What do we need to think about instead of just A or B? The B part, for just morale of all the employees, instead of being able to say, oh, my God, we're $1.8 million in the hole. Oh, wait a minute, we're positive $1 million. No, we're in the – that has to go away so that they have some confidence when we look at the numbers. And Clea's nodding her head because
I know.
Used to get that. and I understand that, because that was just a detrimental kind of thing. And, you know, I'll finally leave this. I just saw our finance, you know kind of projection right now. It says it looks like we'll probably be close to break even this year, which is not a bad thing given all the other things going on.
Exactly.
So, you know, but I now have confidence that we, you know, and it wasn't a prior fault. This whole issue of cash accounting, not being able to look at accounts receivable, paying 1 month ahead of another month and trying to put all that together, you need a CFO that can pay attention to that. So.
It's not a simple budget you have, too. If anybody saw Jim Jones would come in here when we do our budget talks, it was literally about a foot deep. You know, that was just the funds. I mean, that was just all of the different accounts. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll talk a bit on the next side with Clea Rome, who is the Extension Director for Washington State University's Extension Office here in Clallam County, and learn a little bit more about what that office is all about and how it is funded, too. It comes from various different spots as well. We'll confuse you a bit more when we come back with Clea right after this.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio 1450 KONP.
Les Schwab is proud to introduce two of our best tires ever, just in time for summer. There's our exclusive Open Range AT that we believe is the quietest, smoothest, and best all-season traction tire we've ever offered. Or the Reputation, our exclusive high-mileage premium passenger tire, all with the warranty we've stood behind for over 65 years at no extra charge. Book an appointment at LesSchwab.com. Les Schwab Tires. Doing the right thing matters. Limited warranty conditions apply. For details, visit LesSchwab.com.
Have you been in Easy Pond East lately? If not, make it a point to stop in and see all of their new merchandise soon. And if you can't seem to find the time to stop by, you can check out all of their great items online. Just visit buya.com. That's B-U-Y-A.com. A pawn shop only website where you can simply find your favorite pawn shop and browse their items right online. Almost everything in store you can find online at buya.com. Check it out and see what new items Easy Pond East has for you.
It's the final heat of the convenient shopping relay here at Fairmont Grocery. Simmons of the UK is favored in lane 3. And they're off. Simmons takes the early lead, heading straight for the deli, while Jones is gassing up at pump 2. Jean-Pierre of France is finding all the convenient grocery items and closing fast. Simmons has his deli items and still has time to fill up his tank at pump 5. But here comes the American zooming past the beer and wine cooler. He may take it all, but no, it's Simmons. Simmons from the UK takes it with a superb dash through the snack aisle. A gold medal dash at Fairmont Grocery. West 101.
Who doesn't love being number one? When your team's dominating the standings, or your favorite band rocks the charts at number one, it feels good, right? Kind of like how it feels when you have auto insurance with State Farm. Because making you feel like number one is an honor your local State Farm agent takes seriously. Through the good times and not so good, your State Farm agent's proud to be here to help life go right.
Contact State Farm agent Ray Groover at 457-4567.
Scooter says,
lowest financing rates in town. Great car and truck selection at fair prices. Military discounts and 90 days, same as cash option. Why would you shop anywhere else? Relax and browse with no pressure and enjoy finding a car or truck that fits your style and your budget. The other guys, waiting to serve you, been satisfying their customers since 1996. They really are the buy here, pay here company. The other guys, stop in or call 417-3788.
The 19-year-old suspect in last month's synagogue shooting in California has been charged with more than 100 federal hate crimes, including obstructing the exercise of religion, U.S. Attorney Robert Brewer.
That's one count for every person in the synagogue on April 27th, including 12 children.
Brewer says if convicted, John Ernest could be sentenced to death. One woman was killed, three others injured. U.S. and Chinese trade delegations resume their talks this afternoon as the U.S. is set to hike tariffs again on billions of dollars worth of Chinese goods. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she's not rushing to schedule a contempt vote in the full House against U.S. Attorney General William Barr. Pelosi confirms to ABC News she's also considering holding others in contempt, possibly including former White House counsel Don McGahn and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. Washington said goodbye today to Rod Rosenstein, the former deputy attorney general who oversaw the Mueller investigation. He's stepping down. Scott Goldberg, ABC News.
Here is your AccuWeather forecast. This afternoon, mostly sunny and warm, high 73. Clear skies for tonight, low 48. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and warm, high 75. A starry night for tomorrow night, low 50. On Saturday, a few peaks of sunshine and warm, high 72. Mainly clear for Saturday night, low 48. For Mother's Day, mostly sunny and mild with a high of 66. For AccuWeather, I'm Cheryl Golden.
All right, we're back with more. Going to switch gears. We're going to talk about the Washington State University Cooperative Extension Office. And it is an office in the courthouse here in Clallam County, but it really is a purview to a whole lot of other things that are related to it. One, I have a unique relationship on this show. I've got the Master Gardeners who come in once a month and do a whole thing. Yes, that goes through the Extension Office, and you probably hear a lot of PSAs we do for things like seminars and talks and brown bag sessions and things like that, all through the Extension Office. And Cleo Rome is here. She is the director for the Extension here in Clallam County. And Cleo, it's been a long time since I've had a chance to chat with you, and I don't think I've had you in here live in person in forever, but thanks for coming in. Good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm going to just start really basically. Explain to folks what an extension office is, because I think a lot of folks don't even know what it is you do and why you're here.
Sure, yeah. It's a really unique partnership between federal, state, and local resources. So it is both an office of Washington State University that people in the county have access to in order to utilize the resources of the university. It's also a county department. So it's a really unique entity here for people in the county to take advantage of. We've been around for a long time in the county, actually 105 years to be exact. We started back in 1914 when the Smith-Lever Act passed in Congress that established cooperative extension across the United States through the land-grant universities. The demographics of the country looked a lot different back in 1914. A lot of the U.S. citizens lived in rural areas as compared to right now. So that's one way it's changed. A lot more people were farmers. I think upwards of 30% of people back in 1914 were farmers as their primary profession, and now it's around 2%. So while we started out as primarily focused on agriculture, and we still do a lot of work with our local farmers, we've expanded into a lot of other arenas like community economic development, youth development, as the demographics of the U.S. have changed.
Yeah, and when you go back to the original days of the Extension Office, fittingly, Extension Office. It really was a chance for those land-grant universities to extend their knowledge base out afar. You didn't have to travel, in this case, all the way to Pullman, maybe, to get access to a library of for research that's been happening on agriculture, really specifically, how to better grow a crop.
Exactly. It was to take the cutting-edge research that was happening at the university and extend it out to the counties that lived, very far from Pullman.
Exactly. All right. But it still goes on, and there's a lot of things. I just alluded to Master Gardeners. That might be one of the bigger programs that comes through that, and still somewhat related, I guess, to the original mission of an Extension Office, would you say?
Well, yeah. The Master Gardener program was actually started. It's nationwide now, but it was started in Washington, I believe back in like the 1960s or 70s, because so many people were coming into the Extension Office, which again was traditionally focused on commercial agriculture, to ask about home gardening. And so the Master Gardener Program was created to really be a resource for home gardeners, and still very much is. We also talk on topics around stormwater, around native plants, but very much a resource for local gardeners.
That really, it was kind of gardeners helping gardeners how it happened to be. It still is,
still
I guess,
is.
Right?
Yeah. We have about 100 master gardeners in our county who are out. They're out in the schools working with second graders in every single classroom in the county through our youth enrichment program, where kids learn about seedlings and how plants grow, all the way through our brown bags that happen at the courthouse regularly, and our upcoming garden tour as well.
All right. Just another one. Now, 4-H also is a big one. And I know that fits a couple of things. It's agriculture in a way, but it also, I think, is more importantly the youth development part that you've talked about.
Yeah, all the 4-H activities that kids engage in, and lots of people think, when they think 4-H, they think the fair and they think cows. But it's while it's that in a wonderful way, it's also so much more. It's STEM education, it's arts, it's engagement in basic citizenship skills, and 4-H, really, all those activities are just a vehicle to teach kids how to be good citizens.
Mm-hmm. It seems to work, too, because I know most 4-H kids come out okay in the end, don't they?
Yeah, in fact, research that's been done shows that kids who are engaged in 4-H go on to secondary education in greater levels. It serves as a prevention program for kids at risk as well. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great evidence that shows 4-H is positive youth development.
What about locally, 4-H programs here? Growing, or maybe give us a little bit of the feel of things. But certainly, I go to the fair every year, and I am so impressed. Those barns are stuffed full. So, I don't think it's it's waning in any sense of the. So what's is that just anecdotal? What's happening with 4-H locally?
It continues to be strong. It changes.
Yeah.
You know, while it has the elements of the delivery model of the clubs, which we have quite a few in Clallam County, we also do things outside the club model. Like one thing that we just recently started, what is 4-H Fun Night, where once a month. We hold an event that's open to the public. You don't have to be a member of 4-H. Families and kids can come and get a delicious, nutritious meal and engage in all sorts of fun activities.
All right. Yeah. I'm showing my age, I guess, a little bit. It always used to be a club. And, you know, I had a horse and I was in the 4-H club for horses, you know.
Yeah.
Not always that anymore. There's opportunity, though, because it was always like, oh, my gosh, I can't find a club.
Yeah.
Or, you know, one that is close by or something like that.
Lots of different program delivery models. We have camps that we do. We have a short-term sew camp that we do every summer for kids.
Okay.
We have after-school programs that we do. So, yeah, we're kind of all over the board and across the county, I should say, from Squim all the way out to Forks.
Now, you also mentioned there's things like STEM, which, you know, you're trying to get more there's more science involved, engineering, things like that locally. How's that going as far as that effort with 4-H?
Yeah, absolutely. Many of our clubs engage in various STEM activities. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned before, arts activities as well. So you could really say STEAM activities.
I know it's impressive. I mean, I always encourage people, don't just stay over at the horse barn or the ag barns, because there's actually other 4-H stuff happening across the Midway, where everything from, well, I don't know, they're doing presentations on, you know, how to serve up a meal correctly to, you know, to sewing up a...
Flower arrangements,
yeah, right.
Lego club.
Yeah, photography goes on and all of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a whole wide range. And again, those are the activities are just really the vehicle to teach kids about the skills of critical thinking, of partnership and collaboration.
Right. All right. Funding for everything in the extension office, and then we'll get into some of the other things you mentioned. Stormwater. I mean, there's all sorts of things you talk about there. But what is primarily, how is your office funded?
Well, again, it's a really unique partnership between money that comes through the university, specifically allocated to cooperative extension, with huge support at the county level, with the county budget that we have, and at any given time, a whole variety of federal and state grants. So it more or less shakes out on any given year to be about a third of county funding, a third of university funding, and a third of grant funding.
All right. I'm going to switch over and talk to Randy for just a moment, because Randy's a big 4-H proponent with his other life, I like to call it, which he's married to as well. You guys live over at the horse barn during the fair, pretty much, but...
Well, my wife lives over at the horse barn. You know,
year-round, I think, maybe.
Yeah, well, yes. I think this coming weekend she's taking kids off to a horse event in Monroe or someplace. I don't know.
A little loaded question for you, because I know you know the importance on this. But, I mean, it really is a budget issue. And I do remember a number of years ago the tough times for the county budget. And, you know, the extension office budget was kind of on the cutting block. How do you approach that? You know, because some people may look at this and say, this is absolutely funding that has to happen because of what Cleo was just talking about. Others will say, well, is that really in the mission of the county for, basic services?
And obviously, I mean, if you look at where the county puts their money, a whole bunch of different locations.
Yeah.
But you have to think, and of course I'm biased, so and Clea knows I'm biased, and you know I'm biased also, but I think about kids and kids programs, and then you look at, it's kind of like the juvenile justice discussion too. And if you don't have kids involved in activities like this, what are we thinking about for the future of this county or for the whole nation? And to me, that's just critical. And again, the outcomes, when you look, I like results, and they have measurable results. And when you look at the outcomes of kids involved in all those programs, you know, whether it was the pigs or the horses or the cats or the dogs or the plants or the photography, the outcomes for those kids going on to advanced education and understanding, performing really well in school is just wonderful. And I can't say enough about it. So am I sold about it? Of course I am. So, would that be a higher priority of mine? Of course, there are always a lot of high priorities, you know, when you have that. But, and of course, that's why I also get very upset when the state sends down unfunded mandates. There's my discussion again. Boom. And where does that come from? Well, it's got to come out of other programs sometimes.
Right. Bill, same question. I mean, your thoughts about the Extension Office and how, you know, where it fits in your, you know, purview of the pecking order, if you will, in budget.
You know, one of the things that I see is the opportunity for youth to do something other than engage in drugs. You know, you take a look at what we do with 4-H, and you take a look at, say, the swimming pools. Those are opportunities for youth to be exposed to or interact with a role model. And that, you know, the opioid issue that we have is tremendous, and there's not just one solution to it. It takes a combination of lots of different things that you put into effect. And what I do like about the extension program is that it is adaptive. You know, it's not going to do what we did yesterday just because. And just a shout out to Cleo, the program that she's involved in the last 5 years has grown. And a lot of that has to do with your leadership, your ability to remain focused. You know, we were just talking before we came in, 5 years ago, how many people were in your shop and how many people are there today?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Yeah, let's talk about that.
I started as director about 8 years ago, and for much of my first year, it was myself and a very part-time 4-H coordinator and a very part-time, even more part-time, Master Gardener coordinator. Right. Now there's about 9 of us in the office currently, and we have, in addition to our flagship programs like 4-H and Master Gardeners, we have a couple of new programs that we do, particularly our Community Health and Food Access Program and our Waste Prevention Program. And your question about sort of the mandated services versus, you know, how do we prioritize in our county? Well, I'm proud to say that we partner with at least 3 of the other county departments directly and help their work go further. And that would be the Road Department with our roadside invasive species control program that we do in partnership with Noxious Weeds. That would also be our solid waste department that we partner really closely with on our waste prevention program, which I'm happy to talk about more. And also a key piece of the work that we do is really public health work. We are very engaged in addressing food-related chronic disease in our county through our Community Health and Food Access Program. So we directly partner with other county departments and help their resources go further, which I'm really proud of.
And I think that's pretty interesting. Let's talk about the waste prevention or reduction, I guess. Because that's relatively new. I think people don't think of an extension office getting involved with that, but there you are, right?
Yeah, and again, it's in close partnership with the solid waste department in the county. One of the things that we focus a lot on in this growing program is not only working with businesses to address their waste issues and how we can help them with their waste streams, but in particular food waste. Food waste is a huge issue on a number of fronts. Here in Clallam County, at least 20% of our waste stream that ends up in the landfill is food, and much of that is edible food, perfectly good edible food. So we work with businesses, we work with our schools, we work with citizens to try and find ways to recover some of that food before it ends up in the trash. And we work really closely with our food banks and other food access programs around the county to help that food get distributed.
I know a couple of weeks ago we talked about the gleaning program that comes through Master Gardeners and through your extension office. That's one thing. What are some other examples of how you try to attack that that waste stream?
Sure. We've been really engaged with the schools. We've been up at Franklin a few times doing a waste audit over the lunch hour with the cafeteria personnel up there, looking at how food waste happens in a school environment and working with the food service to explore innovative ways for really reducing that waste.
And it can be as simple as how much is being served or, you know, what is being served, right? I mean, there's a lot of variables, I would imagine, in that.
Absolutely, a reuse table where kids can set, for instance, their unopened cartons of milk on the table for other kids to use. Or right now we're looking at the breakfast program where breakfast is served in every classroom. And what happens to that food when it's done in a couple times? Well, we're working on systems to try and capture that food before it ends up in the garbage to spread around to other food pantries in the county.
Very interesting. And again, work that you normally wouldn't associate with an extension office, but there you go.
Yeah, and it has, not only does it have real positive monetary impacts for the school to cut down on food waste, but very real climate change impacts because the food waste, when it ends up in the landfill and decomposes, is a major contributor of greenhouse gases.
All right, before we run out of time, we could probably spend a lot more about all of these programs, but how are you getting the word out about some of this? Again, this goes back to my start of the conversation with you, is that some people may have heard of an extension office, but don't know what it is. That's always a tough thing, I think, and it's probably not just in your office, but any other office around the state.
Yeah, well, we are sometimes a well-kept secret, but I'm happy to say that we partner with so many different organizations and individuals who are well aware of our work and of the importance it has in touching families' lives across the county. I'm also proud to say that we recently hired a new communications coordinator, so you're going to see a lot of new opportunities for us to actually stop the good work we're doing and tell our story, because we get so busy doing the work, sometimes we forget to tell.
Some of the people who preach your gospel are out doing the work and they forget, oh, I probably should tell somebody what we're doing out here. Maybe they may want to join us, right? So I always invite people, you guys, office hours are, what are your?
Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, more or less.
Okay, good enough. Mm-hmm. Give them a call, and you'd be surprised, and you can go online as well and see all of these programs. And some of them may jump out at you as going, wow, I did not know they were attacking that issue, per se, here. So, Clea, good to see you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Likewise, thank you, Randy Johnson. Always great to chat with you. And Bill Peach as well. Thanks for coming in. Have a great rest of the week. And we're going to take a break, wrap things up, and have ABC News coming up next. Stick around.
Happening this Saturday at all coastals in the Northwest, it's the annual Mother's Day Bucket Sale.
Coastal Farm and Ranch, we're just what the country needs.
All moms get a free Coastal 5-gallon pink bucket. Others get a free bucket with $50 purchase. Get 20% off regular prices on everything that fits inside the Coastal bucket, including all boots at regular prices, but excluding power tools. Save 10% off regular prices on anything that doesn't fit in the bucket. There are grill demos from 11 to 3 with free samples and shop savings down every aisle. The Coastal Mother's Day Bucket Sale this Saturday at your nearby Coastal store. Sale excludes ammo, guns, Husqvarna, steel, Honda live animals, all gas-powered equipment, previous purchases, licenses, and gift cards.
Coastal Farm and Ranch, we're just what the country needs.
Now open in Squim in Bell Creek Plaza.
Olympic Peninsula Title, the name you've known for your full title and escrow services, offers contract collection. Let Olympic Peninsula Title process, collect, and disperse funds with your private party loan. Find out more about this service and how it can work for you. OlePennTitle.com. Olympic Peninsula Title. Title, escrow, contract collection. Olympic Peninsula Title.
Are you interested in learning how to pray and bring healing to your life and others? International speaker Nate Frederick, an international speaker and practitioner of Christian Science Healing, will give a talk titled Learn to Pray and Heal, a Spiritual Adventure, on Saturday, May 18th at 2 p.m. The talk will be held in the Quality Inn and Suites at 134 River Road, Squim. Come hear how to put faith, spiritual understanding, and unselfed love into practice and transform lives.
If you think ClinCare is only an alternative to the emergency room when you suffer from an illness or disease, think again. This is Dave Canners from ClinCare, the perfect option for your ongoing primary care. At ClinCare, if you're sick today, you're seen today. If you can't get an appointment or find a doctor, maybe ClinCare should be your primary care provider. Find out more at 452-5000. ClinCare, 621 East Front Street. We make healthcare easier and more affordable.
Have
Have you been looking for a place to have that wedding reception? How about a family reunion, retirement party? The Port Angeles Senior Center has rooms for rent that fit every need. Big rooms, small rooms, and we have reasonable room rent, too. Call 360-457-7004 to see how the Port Angeles Senior Center can help you with your room rental needs. For the Senior Center, this is Yvonne Bayuga.
Look, let's separate the facts from all of the pizza myths that are out there. Fact, Domino's Pizza is the cheesiest, tastiest pizza that ever came out of an oven. Fact, Domino's is offering a large two-topping pizza with a 14-piece order of chicken for only $17.99. Fact, you can get two large two-topping pizzas delivered for only $9.99 each. Fact, a hot, delicious Domino's is waiting now at 452-4222 or online at Domino's.com. Fact, you want Domino's now.
There's no place like home.
And when it's irrigation festival time, there truly is no place like home. The 124th Squim Irrigation Festival is here, with this year's theme being There's No Place Like Home. Let's take a walk down the yellow brick road and find out what's happening at home.
It's the grand finale weekend. So far, we've seen kids in costumes at the Kids Parade, shopped the merchants at the Arts and Crafts Fair, caught the epic production of Legally Blonde at the high school, and viewed art from artists all over the area.
This weekend is the main event. The carnival opens Thursday. Rides, food, and fun are on tap for all who go. Friday is a big day with the golf tournament being held at Cedars at Dungeness.
The Locking Show, one of the biggest elements of the Irrigation Festival, will start on Friday at 10 a.m. down on Blake Avenue. That night, make sure to go watch the Strongman Showdown from 6 to 8 p.m., where the world's strongest men compete in the competitions that you have to see to believe. Stick around for the huge fireworks display that starts at 9:30.
Then Saturday is the day. The Grand Parade starts at noon. This year's parade hosts 107 entries and is even grander than last year. For a full list of events going on this week and into the weekend, please log on to irrigationfestival.com. We hope to see you out and about in downtown Squim.
Radio Pacific is proud to be a media sponsor for the Squim Irrigation Festival, the longest continuous festival in the state of Washington. For a full list of the dozens of sponsors who support this amazing event, log on to irrigationfestival.com.
Squim's 124th Irrigation Festival is bigger than ever, proving once again,
there's no place like home.
The gift shop at Jim's Pharmacy is full of great gifts for Mom. You'll find the perfect card for Mom on Mother's Day, truffles she'll love, and Jim's offers aromatic diffusers and plenty of essential oils to provide Mom the perfect aromatherapy. If Mom likes jewelry, she'll love the Broma necklaces, rings, and other pieces. Mother's Day is coming up. That means a visit to the gift shop at Jim's Pharmacy behind the Port Angeles Post Office.
News Radio KONP, Port Angeles, Squim, FM 101.7 and 101.3.